Capo! Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. February 24th, 2007. How, those of you guys that are listening to, welcome to Tan Talk Radio, people down in Florida too, by the way. Those of you guys that have been listening to my Friday show, that's a $200 seminar that we normally charge for tape-wise that you're getting for free, and that's going over a session probably of about 2-3 months. And it'll be archived, and of course, if you want to buy it, it's $200, so we're saving you some money. A little later on in the show, we're going to have Steve Barish on board, and I really enjoyed the Don and Wynn show tonight. That was a really good one. This is getting to be like a sitcom, you know, and I think that these guys have something to go on TV with. I love how Don and was talking to Wynn about, you know, getting all the hosts together. You know, that's very important. You know, all these really tight cable programs and programs where they run a series of things like MSNBC and CNN and Fox News, all the hosts are pretty tight. That's really good. And all the hosts that are out there listening to me tonight on BBS Radio, I apologize because I haven't had time to get in the loop yet, but most of you know me anyway. And my email is fredbell@pyridine.com. So anyway, I want to talk a little bit about a couple of things tonight. And the first topic that I want to talk about is lasers. Light amplification by stimulation emission of radiation. And I have a particular reason to talk about that tonight. And that is that we are actually in what I would call the laser revolution right now. And the laser revolution means that if you go on eBay or anywhere you go, every company is selling lasers. And tonight I'm going to talk about where all this started and why all it started and what the fervor is for it now. Lasers, light amplification by stimulation emission of radiation. Okay, lasers were discovered or found, you know, developed back when I was working at NASA, and we had what they call MACER amplifiers, microwave stimulation by emission of radiation. What a MACER amplifier was originally used was it was used for a large thing called a radio telescope. And this is before lasers. And what the radio telescope was all about was, if you remember Francis Drake back in 1966, was part of the very first SETI project, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence project, had a very large radio telescope with a MASER amplifier in it. And what a MASER amplifier is, it's an amplifier that is submerged in liquid nitrogen. Now, why would you want to put an amplifier in nitrogen? It's so that it will amplify signals with a very low noise to signal ratio out of nothing, okay? And so that's why they had to do that. They actually started out originally making these amplifiers. Then the idea was that if there was any extraterrestrial race available, that possibly they would realize that the universe is made up of, we talk about all the time, the same as the human body, oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, carbon. Hydrogen being the atom of consciousness that we deal with in our laser systems and our projector effect, you know, and our receptor systems. We're always talking about the hydrogen atom, as you know. So, with that in mind, they began to realize that any smart extraterrestrial intelligence group would probably know what the frequency of hydrogen is, which is a very, very basic. And it's also basic number one on the atomic scale. So they tuned their amplifiers in these telescopes towards the frequency of fundamental hydrogen, set up their these what they call filters, which are also in hydrogen. Basically, the MASER was a filter. And they wanted to listen to some form of hydrogen modulation or variation coming from deep space that varied from the constant and consistent sounds coming from the large solar bodies like suns and stars, etc. In 1966, Francis Drake made contact. out of that noise came a large beep, 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 and he reported it. And of course, because of what had happened at Roswell earlier, the program was classified, and he was basically, at that point, that program was shut down. Well, that was the beginning of masers and lasers. Later on, in the laboratories over at Hughes Aircraft, experimentation started to go with a ruby rod, a ruby rod. And this is back in the late 50s now. Early 60s. The ruby rod, it was found, could be made to oscillate in coherent light by stimulating it with white light. And what happened was, in a ruby rod, all of the photons were dormant and the electrons were active. So when you would stimulate the ruby rod with a white light source, okay, now a white light source is a source that has seven different colors. It was found that the ruby rod, when stimulated by a white light source, only picked up on the green frequency, which we would call the female energy or the yin energy in our receptors. It only picked up on the green energy. And when it picked up on the green energy, it started sending a coherent waveform in the optical frequencies from one end of the polished rod to the other. Well, they found out right away it didn't go any further than that, so they decided to put mirrors on each end. And so by using a mirror surface, then what happened with a mirror surface, they were able to reflect this small coherent energy back into the rod again, and then out through the rod to the mirror on the other end of the rod. So you can imagine a mirror surface oscillating back and forth. And this was beginning the first beginnings of the laser system. Okay. Next, they had a problem with cooling. Cooling didn't work, so they had to work on ways of cooling the laser. And once the cooling system was in place, they were actually able to put a little bit more energy into it and increase the output, and so therefore they could actually start to get a visible beam. And that, of course, began the beginning of powers of lasers. As time went on, we graduated from the ruby laser to the helium neon. Then they found this was a gas medium. They decided to put a gas medium. And this became the helium neon laser, which all of you saw worldwide as the little red laser. And, of course, these were incredibly expensive, like everything else, in the very beginning. Then, as time went on, the procedure of making these lasers became less and less expensive, and they became affordable. And that's about the time that I entered the scene. Now, there were two people that entered the laser scene worldwide before I did. First one was Ivan Ponadel, who set up a very old-fashioned but very expensive system at Mount Wilson called Lazarium. And then later on, a friend of mine named Fred Lord set up a system over in Caesar's Palace, in the Imperial Palace in Las Vegas, which notoriously became all of the laser systems in Las Vegas. So these were the two first people that started initiating this kind of energy into the world public. Well, right away, people picked up on it. The Lazarium light show, I went and saw it when I was a kid and thought it was very amazing. And so I enjoyed the heck out of it. Became friends with Fred Lord later on, saw all his tricks and techniques. So one day, I decided that I wanted to bring lasers out to another medium. I wanted to bring them out to the general public where they were going to be affordable. I had had an electronics company previous to that, and my electronics company used to sell a lot of test equipment to a fledgling company in San Diego called Mel's Griot, MELLESGRIOT, if you look it up on the website. Well, a friend of mine was one of the founders of the Mel's Griot company. So I went down there one day and I asked him, I said, could I trade you some test equipment for some lasers? I want to play with them. And this was the only way I could think of affording them at this point, because Paradyne was just starting at that time. So I ended up trading some lasers and bringing them home. And believe it or not, the very first laser that was ever taken out of there for, you know, new age application is in my living room right now, and I would point the camera at it, but the camera doesn't seem to be working tonight. I'm going to have to tune it up. I wanted to have the camera on tonight, but it didn't seem to work, the one that you see on BBS radio, so I'm going to have that fixed. Something went wrong with it. That laser is on right now, and it was originally turned on about 30 years ago. It hasn't been turned off other than power surges, but basically it's been running for 30 years. It's their original laser that was used for this. And that particular laser, we used to take it out and shoot it into crystals and show it to people at different health shows that we did. This was back in the early 70s we were doing this. So this started to catch on. People would look at the laser beam, and they'd see it going into the crystal. And when it went into the crystal, they would see this big haze come over the crystal, and it would engulf their consciousness. And if you start to realize that the crystal is a perfect synthesis of spirit and matter in zero time, and that the quartz kingdom is the birthplace of the Akashic records. So what we were doing, but we were a little unconscious to it, is we were actually unleashing the Akashic records off the astral plane down onto the physical plane by the use of the laser. Well, how does the laser do that, people would ask me. You know, here's how it works, okay? A photon is coming from the astral plane. Okay, that's where photons live. If you were to astral project up into the astral plane, you would find that it's a self-illuminating place. The world there is self-illuminating. Self-illuminating means you don't need a sun to light something up. You don't need to have an outside source of light to reflect itself in different characteristics, therefore calling bandwidths giving color. You just don't, or wavelengths rather, giving color. You don't need to do that. So the astral plane is great, but that's not where we are here. We're on the physical plane. The astral plane is somewhere we'll be going. We're not in a physical body. So what happens is, in this stimulation of emission of light from the white light source, where the laser tube, we'll just keep going with the ruby here, where the rod actually starts oscillating all down its perimeters, down its axis at the same frequency, absorbing all that energy from the white light, which is green, but then yet producing a red light. In any colored laser, regardless of what color output it is, it always absorbs from white light the green energy, which was an interesting phenomenon. The next thing that would happen is, we're talking about a flash, like a photo flash on a tube, which suddenly stimulates it into producing light. Well, where does this light come from? And we don't have an incandescent light here, which is incandescent light is random light, which you can't use it for much other than random illumination. Can't pull a rainbow out of it, for example, if you reflect it in through a prism. The coherent light that we're talking about comes from the astral plane. The photon is a unit of energy that's self-illuminating from the astral plane. So if you apply a laser to a crystal, what happens is you're illuminating the crystal into the astral plane. So you're taking it from the etheric plane where it normally operates, which is actually a lower plane. You're illuminating up on the astral plane. At the same time, it causes the body to absorb wavelengths subtly of light, and you probably have a much higher assimilation of the intelligence in a crystal by illuminating with a laser had you just be looking at the crystal without any laser light. So that was the very beginning. It caught on very well, and pretty soon we were selling lasers and crystals all over this planet. We were the very first to do that. So we became the number three person people to, you know, along with Ivan Ponadel and Fred Lord and myself, we became the third person, Paradyne did, to take lasers to a new level. As a result of this, I built up a huge relationship with Mels Griot. And as the prices went down on the red lasers were once upon a time $1,000 for a 5-milliwatt laser, and in the end they were probably $50. Then the green laser came along. The green laser came along as a modification of the helium neon red with special filters and optics. And so we were able to introduce the green laser out there. So up until this point in our system, we were the only people in New Age anywhere to introduce red and green lasers in the entire planet. There's nobody else that did it because nobody else was doing it. A little later on, another company came along over in up in the Riverside area, and they came up with a helium-cadmium laser, and it was a violet laser, very expensive. And by the way, what these lasers were being used for commercially were Xerox machines. They were using them for color Xerox machines, and they were scanning these various colors, and they were getting their color to light-sensitive paper, and therefore you could see it as color paper at Xerox. So that's what these machines were being, lasers were being made for originally. We were the ones that took them out of a machine and decided to put them out in the public. The helium-cadmium laser was developed by a company called Omnichrome, and it was designed to make holograms, believe it or not. And the holograms, in the production of holograms commercially, they were to be used by putting a beam into a resin solution with a pattern on it from a, what's called a CAD pattern, a CAD program. So in other words, you could, let's say you're making your General Motors, you're designing a new distributor for your car, you need a, right away you need a prototype of a distributor cap, and so you design this on a computer and shine it onto the laser, put it into the laser, and it would project this image down into the solution, and it would harden by the helium-cadmium beam, and it would, and a few hours later, you'd pull out a liquid or a plasticized part made out of a liquid with the use of helium-cadmium. That's where the business was going. We took it into the meditation area, but the problem was that we couldn't get enough of these lasers. They were incredibly expensive. They were very unreliable. They broke easily. They were very delicate. So this is how it all started. Later on, and I realized at the same time that as we move around the Pleiades, every 26,827.5 years, we go into different consciousness levels, different eras of consciousness. And so as we move from the Piscean Age into the Aquarian Age, the seven levels of consciousness, or seven levels of feelings, start to compress on themselves. In other words, the mental plane starts to fall into the astral plane. The astral plane starts to fall into the physical plane. What this means is that people don't no longer have to be high-level sensitives as they were, say, at the turn of the century during Blavatsky's and Ledbetter's and the White Brotherhood days when the theosophical groups were all over this planet professing all the metaphysical knowledge that they had at the time. And only a few were grasping it. Now everybody can grasp it because where we are in the rotation of the precession of the equinox, everybody can actually grasp it. A lot of people aren't ready, but they're being exposed to it anyway. And, of course, that means increased bandwidth within their consciousness. And that's why the race, believe it or not, is going towards more holistic foods, less towards meat and junk food, even though it's junk food's everywhere. There is a huge movement towards holistic living. It's growing. It's getting better. And these are the folks that will go into what's called immortality. Well, when you come up onto the doors of immortality, what happens is, you start to see into the mental plane and feel into the astral plane without assistance from much of anything. However, the government, of the world, the governments of the world, especially the One World Order, is very aware of this transition. Believe me, they're not stupid. They have been there. They've been remote viewing and doing all kinds of crazy psi experiments. Russians were doing it back in the 50s. Were a little bit poo-pooed by the American governments. Now they're all trying to play catch-up with what Russia did 30 years ago. So they don't want the populace to have this information. They really don't. But the bottom line is, companies like Paradigm, producing the things that we do, bring out stuff to unblock their little blocks. In other words, they're blocking this growth. How do they block it? They're blocking it with satellites like the Clementine, with ELF and HARP, and allowing chemicals in the food, allowing sprays in the aircraft engine exhaust like contrails. All of these things are little links, little blocks to block your ability to go into the hydrogen atom, which is the source of the photon, the source of consciousness, and get a clear reading, get confidence. That's what they're doing. The drug companies, of course, when you have all these blocks from all these things I'm mentioning going on, then of course your body gets very frustrated because your consciousness and your spirit want to move forward. They know it knows, and they know it knows. All of these entities within ourselves, which is part of our oneness and beingness, knows we're supposed to be progressing into the next order of the ages, the new order of the ages. But, you know, they get blocked. And a lot of folks that aren't very enlightened, this blockage, along with bad food habits, creates a huge amount of depression. So when all this depression sets in, people have to go to the drugstore and get pharmaceuticals, all kinds of effectors and Zolofts and all these drugs to cover up this growth of consciousness and this pain that's being created in this growth as it's being met by ELF and all these bad frequencies. So, once again, the laser becomes very important because it will burn a hole through all these energies. That's why at Teradyne, for example, we've been, you know, putting lasers into our products for over 30 years. 30 years. If you were to come into my house, you would probably find at least 30 to 35, maybe 35, 40 lasers in here, all in different applications and all colors of the rainbow. Now, the next thing is, obviously something else is going on. Well, the solid-state laser came along, what's called an NPN or NP junction laser. Okay, these lasers came along. It was discovered that rather than reflecting light with the advance of semiconductors, rather than having to have big tubes and big lights and pumping mechanisms, we could actually put a bias on a substrate and produce photons from actual substrate material, very similar to what's in a transistor. And hence we had the birth of what's called the diode laser. Diode laser got to such a point that the red lasers, you can buy them from Newark Electronics, the bare diode itself, which will emit a small amount of energy, up to 5 milliwatts, for around $12 or $13. So now we went from something that I started doing years ago. Actually, a 1 milliwatt laser was $1,000 when we first brought it on the market. Now you can get a 5 milliwatt laser for under $10. So the price dropped. And then if you go on eBay and all these different places, you see all these Chinese companies coming on board. Well, one of the next things that we did, going back into the past, when we discovered that the laser beam was important, we wanted to, in our programming devices, like in our radiator systems, we wanted to actually program crystals like a master crystal. So I went to a friend of mine who worked for the Department of Defense, and I found out that the government had already been programming crystals with a code through a computer. So, and they were using what's called a scanner, meaning that they would type a code into a computer, and then the computer would then send energy to a scanner. And what a scanner is two little mirrors, one moves up and down and one moves left and right, that were connected from the output of the laser, and then they would bounce directly into the crystal. And so they were programming master crystals through a very simple encoded system. So I was able to get my hands on that and develop a system which we sold here for a long time until my friend over in Las Vegas, where he produced these things, he disappeared one day. He had to go, I guess, full-time in DOD, and he could no longer make them. So we were making these boxes. They were amazing. You could actually program a system. So then I talked to Fred Lord. Fred Lord was over there, and they were, if you remember the old laser shows, the beam moves around in the audience. It doesn't just sit there. It moves around. It jumps from point A to point B. Well, he was using an electromagnetic scanner system. And so we decided, well, what can we do to bring this out to the general public? Well, we decided we would try to find some surplus scanners, which we later on did. But in the interim, what we had to do is we had to take a small mirror and place it on a radio speaker, and then place the radio speaker over the sound, like New Age sounds that we were using, and then bounce the energy off the laser from the radio speaker playing New Age music into the crystal. And that, of course, was another way of programming it. So we no longer had the NSA codes, but now we were able to do something that actually, in the long run, seemed to work better. Well, then a couple of companies down in St. Louis got the idea. They saw what we were doing, and they started making some very inexpensive scanners. today, all over the internet, you can find lasers and scanners and all kinds of things that do all of this now. Literally, a couple of hundred companies around the world are making these products. That just goes to show you where we set the trend, and now the whole world is getting on board. And, of course, the prices have dropped on green lasers now. You can get a pretty nice one for $200 or $300. Now, blue lasers are still expensive, and violet lasers, which are considered the most expensive, still quite rare. And to give you an idea what the frequencies are, the red lasers run in the 600 nanometer area, the green lasers run in the 500 nanometer area, and the blue lasers run from about 472 nanometers down to 402 nanometers, which is ultraviolet. So sometimes you'll see a laser for sale that's 800 or 900 nanometers. Well, it's far infrared, and it's not any good for programming crystals. You need something below 656 nanometers to actually see it and get usage out of it. So you get different tints of red. And I'm going to get back over here on the front cover of BBS. I haven't even looked to see if we have anything going on in the fast chat. And with that said, I want to bring on Steve Barry. Steve, are you there?
Yes, I am, Fred.
Well, tell us what you've been up to. How'd you like our little laser chat there? Was that good?
That was great. That was great. Yeah. I've been doing a lot of work with the projectors.
Yeah.
And I called a lot of people that have been calling me. I think a good friend of yours, his name is Dave Lampert in Houston.
Yeah, Florida. He's a former big Bank of America guy, and he's a former, used to spend a lot of time up there at Santa Rosa at the, what should we call it, the place up there the where I'm wishing everybody goes.
Right.
Anyway, I work a controversial place. He spent a lot of time in there.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. Very, very nice. Yeah. He and his wife are very sweet. I talked to them for about an hour today.
Yeah, he's a fabulous.
And, we were talking about the projectors and the nuclear receptors and the projectors that we wear. And he had a problem with his lungs, and I went in and cleared the lungs.
That was the Bohemian Club. That's where he worked. He's on that. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. And, go ahead. He had a problem with his lungs.
He had some problems with his lungs, and I changed the DNA structure of his body. I've been able to see the DNA come out of the body and actually change the structure of that, so we did that today. And then we got on to more important things. Not that that wasn't not important, but we got on to the nuclear receptors and the projectors. As a matter of fact, I'm experimenting with the projectors now by being able to reach over to people and remotely touch the projectors. And I actually, Dave actually felt me touching his projector, and I said, you'll be able to feel this energy going down your legs, and he did. So there's a lot to do with the projectors. It's just we're coming into a period where our minds are becoming so perceptive and so aware and so powerful. I don't think anything could stop it at this particular point right now. There's a few of us, I think, on the planet, including you, and I don't know how many other people, maybe it could be thousands, but we won't be denied our rights to use our brains and be able to help as many people as we possibly can.
Yeah, well, the beautiful thing about all of this is that the government, somehow or other, isn't where we're at. They're still studying the changes in DNA and the changes in things when they make one change in a laboratory and they observe the changes that's uniformly observable through, subatomic physics and measuring networks, anything from a Wilson cloud chamber to an electron microscope. So they're able to make these observations, but, you know, they have no idea about the programming. I mean, it's pretty amazing how we're so far ahead on the programming part. It seems
it's just I find it amazing that the frequencies that we're using to heal people, I mean, I've seen them and I've worked with them. Talk about changing the colors into blue rays or yellow rays or red rays. It's very possible to do with the mind. And I believe the mind is the ultimate piece of equipment that we have that will outstand everything. I mean, I don't think there's anything more important than the universe, and the universe is really, we're plugged into the universe, and the universe is plugged into us, and I think that we can do anything we want to do.
Yeah,
I really believe that with our minds. And that's the way I feel. I think lasers are wonderful. I think it's actually the way of the future. But I think the mind is so powerful, Fred, that we have, I just think we're just touching the surface with our minds right now in a way that we've never been able to do before.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, it's been wonderful working with a lot of people. As a matter of fact, two women that I think you were talking to had called me, I believe it was Marjorie and Rebecca, who are coming up to my, I believe one's in Brooklyn, I forget what the other person is, they're coming up to my my place of business next month.
Well, that'll be
and,
good.
Yeah, they want to take a look at the projectors, and they want to see what's going on in my room, and I explained to them that I have a 600-foot vertical, just a tremendous mass of energy that's coming in from heaven, a vortex more or less, and it's about 600 or 700 feet high that we can see it, and it spreads out about 6 or 7 miles that we've been able to feel. So the projectors are extremely powerful, and they're becoming even more powerful. I truly believe that the projectors, you talk about the way of the future, I think the projectors are going to be the way of the future, Fred. There's no question in my mind.
Yeah, that's interesting technology. I'm learning a lot from it, and I'm sure we'll take it to another level, but right now they seem to be doing just fine, you know.
Yeah.
We have redesigned the one that you wear around your neck.
Right.
Much higher powerful entity than it was. But the other ones are still fine, but we're probably within another month we'll be taking orders for the new ones.
Yeah.
I'll be looking at the first one next week. It took a little while because when we design these molds, it's, you know, a mold is $4,000 or $5,000 and they have
right.
to be done on a CNC machine.
Yeah.
And we actually told them one, just throw it in the trash. I didn't like it. So they tossed it, you know.
Gotcha.
So people
gotcha.
Wonder why these things are not exactly the cheapest thing on the planet. Well, when you realize development costs, remember, we actually had the design of the projector back in the early 80s, right after the
mm-hmm.
receptor was given to us. But we couldn't even begin to produce a receptor then, let alone a projector, because the geometry was too difficult for any kind of a machine tool or computer program at the time. So we had to use what's called a pantograph to make the receptor. Unfortunately, we couldn't use a pantograph on a projector because we wouldn't be able to cast it. Because it requires a reverse mold, which so therefore that we have to have special aluminum molds now, which we do have, to make this
mm-hmm.
stuff possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nightmare. It really is.
Well,
that's the production side of it. So you guys are out there doing the healing side of it. I bring these things in as a scientist, and then I turn the designs over to people like you, healers, and you healers are out there, and I don't claim to be one, by the way. I help people get well, but you guys are doing it every day, and so I'm not in your league anymore. So it's important to get all this feedback. Now, do you wear your projector quite a bit?
Oh, yeah. I wear my projector and nuclear receptor. I have an 18-karat cold nuclear receptor with the pavé on it, the platinum pavé with diamonds, and that seemed to up the energy about 500% ever since I added that pavé on.
Okay.
And the nuclear receptor seems to be working very well with the projector that I wear. That's 18-karat gold with the platinum bridge and the diamonds in it. And I've been able to perform a lot of things with that. That seem to be adding a lot more energy to my own ability.
Yeah. Now, do you feel as we move around the Pleiades that there's a change I think in the energy of these systems,
right? Well, the projectors that are up on the wall are definitely becoming a lot more powerful and a lot more potent. I was looking at a projector on a wall today that that David had, and it was just nothing but pure white light when I was looking at his projector. And I was able to touch it and change the energy going through David. So I know that experimenting with that, there's going to be a lot more to do with the mind. I can't even comprehend it right now, but I know that it can be done.
Yeah. Now you're very much on the alignment of these things on the wall.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I know. I always have people. I always refer people to you to position the units when they get them.
I usually tell them about either 6 feet to 5 feet 10, and put them up on the wall and to stand them vertically. And I move them up maybe about 2 or 3%. In other words, I take the bottom part of the projector and raise it up about 2 or 3%, and that actually gives you a tremendous amount of energy that comes through the projector even more. And again, I could tell the people that I did have the Andromedans come in my room. I was taken to their planet. A lot happened to me. My chakras were doubled in size. So these things really, really happen. They really do work, and the projectors are a powerful tool, a very, very powerful tool.
Now, when this happens, what about other people that put these things, assemble these systems into their?
Well, we had one about 3 weeks ago. A young fellow was in, I forget what state, I think it was Iowa?
Yeah.
I believe it was Iowa. And he set up the projectors the way that I had told him to, and he had ships landing on his fields. So
wow.
I presume, I think we talked about that maybe two or three visits ago, but I remember him telling me that he had the Andromedans land on his land. And so I believe that a lot more is going to happen. Tremendous more is going to happen.
Yeah.
I think people are going to be very, very aware of what's going on with your product, Fred.
Yeah, it seems to be getting out there pretty good right now. It's not only really mine, but we produce it here, but it's really an Andromedan design.
Yes.
Why do you think it's so critical that these things have to be up so high? Why can't people put them on a floor?
You can. You can put them anywhere as you want. You can put them on a floor. You can put them on a table. You can put them anywhere as you want. I'm not saying that that wouldn't be a bad idea. I just, when I ordered mine, I put them up on the ceiling. It's about 5 feet, 10 inches up on the wall, and I have it north, south, east, and west.
Right.
And, excuse me?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Right. And, After making that setting, I've seen the actual room disappear. My room would actually disappear right in front of me and some of my clients. And it looked like heaven. We were looking through. It looked almost like heaven. I know that the room disappeared, and I saw my client, but I suspect if somebody walked in that they wouldn't have seen us at all.
Yeah. Well, how many of your clients see this stuff?
I've only had one, Fred, that's happened with, and it's happened with me once, one time by myself in the room.
Oh, cool.
But the top of the building actually would disappear, and that disappears a lot for me. And there is a pyramid that appears, and an Andromedan ship to the right of the room of the pyramid. And that would be on the eastern side of the wall. And it's quite big. It's a very, very big ship. And so I've been able to see the pyramid above my room, actually, and the top of the, as I said, the room would actually disappear. And the roof would actually be gone, and I'd be looking at the ship and the pyramid all at the same time with all the gorgeous colors that appear with it. So there is a lot going on in my room. I suspect there's a lot going on in a lot of people's rooms. whether they see it or not, there's a lot going on, Fred. I think that people are opening up to a tremendous amount of energy. We have to keep our minds very disciplined with this equipment because it's nothing to play with. This is a real McCoy.
Yeah. Well, I think that more and more people are starting to get into having these experiences now. You don't have to live in a remote ranch somewhere in Washington or Oregon to see phenomena. You can see it in your own house.
Absolutely.
I think that's really cool. That
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually here and happening now. I think that's a great idea.
Right. We have a friend of ours in New Hampshire that we've been working with, and I think about two or three visits ago, she had C1 and C2 where she damaged it and hasn't been able to move in, was it two or three years, Fred, I think?
Yeah,
I had her toes moving and her right thumb moving. So there's no limit to what we can do with the projectors. There's no limit to what we can do with our minds.
No, I agree.
Yeah, and so I think we're on our way to creating a tremendous amount of healing all around the world. It doesn't make any difference if I'm here or another person is on Jupiter. It doesn't make any difference. The energy is instantaneously passed through.
I agree. If anybody wants to send us a live chat, just go to the live chat on the front, on the index page of BBS Radio. I don't see as much activity there tonight as I do some nights. It's a BBS fast chat right below the windows where the pictures of myself and the other person that's having a show on a different network. I guess we're running two shows now. I guess we got a late night network that we have now, mm-hmm. too, which is interesting. I guess pretty soon BBS Radio is going to be everywhere, Steve. You know, you just turn on your TV and you're going to be watching BBSRadio.com.
I think it's wonderful, Fred.
Yeah.
I think that the program is so important to let people know that there is alternative ways to living and there is alternative ways of using your mind that's so important. Whatever I can do, there's people out there who can do it a lot better than I can. And I truly believe that there's people out there that can do it just as well, if not better than I. And I think that we're basically that every person on this planet has the ability to heal.
Okay.
I really believe that.
The question that came on just now, how does the use of orgone assist in Pyridine products? I'm going to answer this question here really quickly. Okay, first of all, most people don't know what orgone even is. Orgone is the ability to amplify psi energy, PSI energy, through different physical mediums, okay? The easiest way to describe orgone in the scientific community was the transistor. The transistor was developed between a N and P junctions, whereas there would be a bias put on a silica substrate of a positive charge, and another substrate slightly different next to it would have a negative, and electrons would cross that barrier. Okay, Wilhelm Reich originally developed a wool and cotton blanket back in the 40s, and this wool and cotton blanket, in other words, a layer of wool, and then a layer of steel wool. He actually used steel wool and then cotton and wool. He created a chi amplifying effect, which had a tendency to get rid of arthritis. So these were the earlier methods where people were learning about the orgone effect. In our products, including the projector that we're talking about, we use a plating process called active and passive substrate layering, meaning that we use metals like nickel in an electroplating substance, metals like copper, which is, nickel is inert, copper is active. Then we'll use another inert metal, and then we'll use another thing like gold. And we have learned over the 30-year period or 31-year period that we're in business that the amount of time in a plating tank is very critical for each piece. It's a science. And we didn't come up with these formulas of how much this metal and how much that metal. And that means physically taking the the product out of a tank, cleaning it, and then physically putting it in another tank and turning on a fixed voltage for a certain period of time within a half a second, and then taking it out of there and putting it in another tank. So a lot of our products are plated by aerospace companies. Power domes, for example, are done by aerospace companies. So every product that we make has some kind of an orgone effect to it. If we're using solid materials like platinum and gold, then we don't have any plating involved, but the action of platinum and gold itself in the geometric forms that we use it in produces the orgone effect. Okay? That might be interesting for you, too. The guy asked the question, and now here's one you can answer,
sure.
Davis from D. Dr. Bell, what would you advise a newcomer to purchase and use first? Now, you, Steve, what do you think that people should start with in our product line?
I think that they should really start with a nuclear receptor. I know when I got mine about 8-9 years ago, it was so potent and so wonderful to use. I know I had mine on for about 3 or 4 days, and my wife and I were in Wellsboro, Pennsylvania, and I saw a lot of black coming out of my back. And I called you right away, and I said, Fred, I have black coming out of my back. Can you please tell me what that is? And you were tuning into me and said, well, that's all the x-rays that you had all your life are starting to come out of your body.
Let me explain why that is real quick, okay?
Sure.
Can I just jump in here for a second? It appears when we do a remote viewing on someone and we see something, we're looking for color or absence of color. The first thing a remote viewer does is to prepare a black canvas in their head, nothing, no light, nothing. And then they proceed to go on stimulation, whether it's country, winter, time of year, time of day, and these colors and visions come. When we look at someone who we already know has a aura field coming out of their body, starting from the base of the spine and going up to the head or vice versa, and we see an area of blackness, that means that there is a short circuit, a absence of light. And the only thing that can create an absence of light is gamma radiation. And gamma radiation is what is produced by x-rays, and it produces what's called a free radical in the body. And for a period of time after a person is x-rayed, I might add, this black hole remains. Now, just check this out. TSA, who we always slam on hot rod to hell, and I'm getting ready to put pictures up on BBS Radio how they destroy our products. So we got more than one picture to show now. And TSA is the people that run the airline, you know, the frequency checks, you know, the patting your body on. Well, they're going to be x-raying everybody now, gets to get x-rayed to get on a plane. And there are some issues right now because of the private parts on male and female body. The female body and male body will be observed. Now, they have the observer in a different room, but starting this summer, when you go on an airplane, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to be x-rayed. Hopefully, you'll have a receptor on. And the funny thing about it is that every time when we used to do trade shows, that we would carry nuclear receptors in a box, hand luggage. We never trusted them in the luggage. We can carry them. We put them through the machine. They've always been x-raying your purse or your shoes or whatever you stick through there. And they, of course, would x-ray the box or the package that we would be carrying the nuclear receptors in. And, of course, the nuclear receptors would neutralize the radiation, put out a weird image. So every single time when we would have 20 or 30 receptors in a little hand carry-on briefcase satchel, we'd have to be pulled aside and we'd have to open it up and show them what they were. And then we would explain to them that this neutralizes their x-ray. And that would then they would understand. So, I mean, we're talking nuclear receptor here. These things are pretty powerful, but they already have. But you know what? Look what's going to happen to the consciousness now of people, everybody getting on an x-ray. This is why I don't travel anymore, because I'm only doing private jet now, and if I can't do that, I won't go anywhere, because I don't need to be x-rayed. I'm not afraid of them. It's proving a point. You know, if they want to bring the aviation business to a standstill, they're definitely working on it now. What do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We don't need to be x-rayed every 5 minutes to get on a plane.
Yeah, and that's have you seen the machines they're putting out now?
No, well, I haven't seen them, but I've been x-rayed going.
You're going to have them right in your backyard by the end of the summer. Everybody's going to have them.
I've been x-rayed just going into a federal building.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
yeah.
You got to pass your merchandise through. You got to take things off. And you know you're being x-rayed. I mean, you know, you walk through these booths and you're being x-rayed.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, it's really not fair.
Yeah.
It's really not fair.
Okay, now here's another one question from Kurt for you.
Sure.
Compare the uses between the projector necklace and the standalone system. In other words, here's Kurt wants to know, what's the difference between wearing the small one on your neck and having a big standalone system in your house, like you have?
Yeah, the projector wearing alone is something that can help you in your growth that you're wearing around all the time. It actually infuses with the brain. It will help you in your personal growth because it is with you all the time, where the projector at home, you're in and out of the house. The projector will help you. It will become part of you. The projectors at home will become part of you, but I like the one that I wear around my neck a lot because it just changes everything right away, in and out of your house. The projectors in the house with the projector around your neck become a big potent team. Very, very potent. And,
now I remember, did you start out with a solid gold one, or you started out with a silver one or something, right?
No, I have a solid gold projector, and it's got the platinum bridge with the four diamonds in it. And then I've got the 18-karat gold nuclear receptor with the pave, the platinum pave with diamonds on it.
I started out with a
silver one. I had a silver one that I wore for about, I would say at least 5 or 6 years, Fred. And it had
silver.
A blue sapphire stone in it.
Okay.
And I never changed that stone. I used it all the time. In those 5, 6 years, I never changed that stone.
Yeah, there's a girl named Anna. I'll answer this one. Can I use my own diamond for your nuclear receptor? Yeah, Anna, you can use your own diamond as long as it's between 4 and 7 millimeters. Other than that, preferably around 7 to 6 millimeters, because otherwise we have to design a special bridge. Well, anyway, we're running close to out of time already. Can you believe that? That was a quick show, wasn't it?
That was fast.
Yeah, anything else you wanted to... Why don't you put your phone number out there before I do my little Hot Rod to Hell section here.
Yes, phone number is 585-746-8321, and I'll help anybody that I possibly can.
Very good. Well, anyway, we're running out of time, and Steve Barish has been very important for our clients. Steve has helped a lot of people. He's still helping a lot of people, and we're constantly referring people over there. All kinds of problems. You handle about anything over there these days, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
All right. Thanks, Steve. I will have you on again soon. Tonight we're going to do the closing show with Hot Rod to Hell. And once again, I have to pick UPS, United Parcel Services, that destroys everything. Almost every week now, we have a horrible situation with them. I ship stuff all over the world, as a lot of you people know, and we're probably going to switch over to FedEx. I think that's about where we're going to have to go. The problem that we talked about earlier with the bicycle, which never got resolved, where they sent me a $100 check after destroying a $400 bicycle, which was insured and packed and shipped by them. Even the packing was done at one of their centers. They still have charged me twice for the packing of something that arrived here destroyed. They still have it on my record. How do I know that they have it on my record? Is because last week I got a notice from them that my company, my business, had failed to pay the December invoice. We've been with them 25 years or 30 years, and we spend thousands of dollars a month with UPS paying our company shipping bill, which you, of course, pay us to ship you things. And so... last week, how do we find out we never got the December bill? They decided to shut our services off, but the UPS driver knows they're screwed up, and so he keeps coming anyway. So I call the company back on the East Coast, and say, look, here's my credit card. I'll pay the bill which you just sent me, which was quite a bit, and the bill that I owed you for, and would you please send me a copy of the bill that I never got? And thank you for not warning me that you're going to shut off our services of shipping. You just go ahead and do it. You're such a great, wonderful company. So the lady looks up the bill and says, yeah, there's several thousand dollars owed from December. We apologize because you didn't get it, and then there's thousands of dollars owed now because I just got my bill. I said, let's pay it all right now by a credit card. Let's take care of it now. And she says, oh, by the way, do you know there's a $300 charge against you personally? I says, yes, I know. You've been to collection with it. Your own collection company threw it out. All right? That's UPS, United Parcel Services. Now, on top of all of this, you know, so I paid the bill. The service got turned on. Everybody's getting shipped. There was no interruption because the driver knows they're screwed up. And the driver that comes to my house is one driver, and he tells me how screwed up they are. And the driver down there at the shop, the business where I have, is a different driver. He tells us how screwed up they are. Very screwed up company. They don't give a damn about anything. So now what they've done, though, is they've put me on weekly billing versus monthly because I didn't pay a bill that I didn't get. And on top of that, now remember, 3 weeks ago, I had a $20,000 diamond ring that I bought from Mikkel for her Christmas present, which I saved up all year, stolen by UPS when it was sent back up to the place that made it for sizing. Still haven't got my $20,000 back from UPS yet. So, I want to send every person that has anything to do with bean counting, management, decisions, straight to hell. Because UPS, you're going to fall. You're going down. Somebody's going to come, and mark my words, listeners out there, and you know how they destroy stuff, because I'm sure a lot of you out there get things broken. UPS, a year from now, is going to be a very crippled company because even their own drivers don't like UPS. They're a bunch of crooks and con artists and idiots. So I want everybody out there to send UPS hot rod to hell vibes. Send them a fax. Send them an email and tell them to wake up because they're going down, baby. They're going to take a hot rod to hell.
I love you.